This morning I'm going to continue talking about Genjo Koan. So we are up to lecture 10. The part I'm going to talk about, I'll read it to you, but I'm not going to do a line-by-line commentary of this. But here's the two paragraphs that I want to talk about today. The first one is, when Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind, you may assume it is already sufficient. When Dharma fills your body and mind, you understand that something is missing. For example, when you sail out in a boat to the middle of an ocean where no land is in sight and view the four directions, the ocean looks circular and does not look any other way. But the ocean is neither round nor square. Its features are infinite in variety. It is like a palace. It is like a jewel. It only looks circular as far as you can see at that time. All things are like this. Then Dogen continues. Though there are many features in the dusty world and the world beyond conditions, you see and understand only what your eye of practice can reach. In order to learn the nature of the myriad things, you must know that although they may look round or square, the other features of oceans and mountains are infinite in variety. Whole worlds are there. It is so not only around you, but also directly beneath your feet or in a drop of water. So that's the part that I'd like to talk about today. So Dogen starts out after the first couple of lines giving this example of being out in a boat. So this probably came to Dogen when he was on his way to China from Japan. He was out on the open sea. Might have been the first time in his life that he had had that experience. So being a Dharma student, he immediately translated his experience into an example of the Dharma. So he goes out in the middle of the ocean, and he got out far enough from the shore to be able to view the ocean as being in a circle without features. And I think most of us are aware of this phenomenon. It also happens in a large lake. So you see, what he saw was this unbroken, smooth, circular horizon in the distance. So this is the time when he said in the first sentence, when the Dharma does not fill your whole body and mind. So this view, from a dharmic point of view, if we're going to talk about this as a kind of doctrinal dharmic point of view, is a glossed over big picture view of reality. It seems to present the totality, but actually, Dogen's saying, no, that's a limited view. So for example, we think that when we start practicing, we think that the goal of practice is to live in emptiness. Non-duality, that's the goal of practice. And actually, when we approach practice from that point of view, we are only seeing this limited view of the Dharma. We are only seeing the ocean as a circle, the horizon as a circle with no features. We think that we're having some kind of special experience and that's the goal, called enlightenment, to have these special experiences. We think when this experience happens that our whole body and mind, to quote Dogen, is full. And we think this because the experience itself is so intense. But actually, to think of this kind of experience as the goal of practice is incomplete. It's an incomplete understanding. This kind of experience gives us a really visceral and body experience of non-duality, but in and of itself, as the totality of the goal of Dharma practice, it is an incomplete understanding. It is not the goal. And it's not the goal because it's not incorporated with the messiness of your life. Our goal is to meet our life with wisdom, compassion, and skillful response. To meet life with wisdom, compassion, and a skillful response. That's the goal. That's the bodhisattva practice. So sometimes we read dharmic texts on non-duality and we think that's it. And actually, that seems like a pretty good idea. It's as if we had transcended our mundane, daily, problematic life. And what's not to like about that, actually, to not have to be mucking around the weeds of our confusion, our difficulties with other people, etc. But from a practice point of view, it's just not enough. When we are immersed in daily life as practice, then we can never reach the end of our practice, which is why Gedogen says, when the Dharma fills your body and mind, you understand that something is missing, that we can never reach the end of this practice. When I was younger, before I started practicing Buddhism, I would go off and sit by myself and try to have transcendent experiences. And I remember a friend of mine said, she said, well, you know, you go off and do that, but you're actually a really angry person. And when I drive around with you in a car, you yell and scream at other drivers, and you get really upset and say, you know, bad things. So what's the point of all this transcendent practice? Are you trying to, you know, I thought that the point of practice was to transcend reality. So this was more kind of an Indian practice. And you know, after she said that to me, I thought, that makes a lot of sense. And you know something? I'm going to stop trying to transcend practice, transcend my life. I'm going to actually just sink right into my life as it is. So that's when I started going to bars and dancing and carrying on and giving up the spiritual life. But it had a pull on me, and then I came back around. But there was this wisdom, I think, in this notion of, you know, take care of your anger. Take care of the emotional side of your life. Take care of the part that's not working. Don't try to transcend it. Don't try to get rid of it. So our practice is not about getting rid of the difficulties. It's about going into. Dogen says, you know, twining vines, he says. It's not about cutting off the problems. It's about going into and bringing about transformation. So, here's another example of this. When we're first taught about the precepts, we're told the precepts are like, don't lie, don't steal, don't harbor ill will. They're very prescriptive. But the reality is that we can only use the precepts, these admonitions, as guidelines. It's really important to study these rules, but it's not enough. If we just go by these rules without any nuances, that's like being in the middle of the ocean and seeing the horizon as a circle around us. We have to discern in our own lives how to enact the precepts according to our current life situation. Then they become koans for us, questions about how do I live this life. They're not hard and fast rules. If we make them hard and fast rules, then we become rigid. We become judgmental. So is it true that you ever, you know, is truth always the same thing every time? Talking about the precepts here of not lying. Well, sometimes the truth is black and white. It's like talking about the reason fires had happened. It would be a lie to say that there were no fires. Sometimes the truth, though, is hard to understand, and we don't know what to say. We say, how do I respond to the suffering of these fires? Sometimes not being entirely truthful, as we see it, may be a more skillful action. How do we know? It's only our maturity as people, our wisdom in practice, our adherence to the Bodhisattva path as our guide that determines our understanding of a precept. So, We only come to see this by seeing the particular outlines, the rocks and the beaches and the shore. This is Dogen saying, the ocean is neither round nor square. Its features are infinite in variety. So Dogen's saying that when you realize this global round view is not enough or sufficient as practice, then you realize that the Dharma body fills your body and mind and that something is missing. In your original understanding, which was deficient, but also something's missing in the sense that there's always something more. There's always something arising, presenting itself, engaging you. You begin to see all the ways that you have to make effort in practice. Practice is actually about entering the mud of our lives, not transcending our life. Practice happens on the shore, not in the middle of the ocean. So right now in our culture, many of us, especially white people, are in this conference that I went to, maybe more politically correct to say we are white bodies, people in white bodies, are looking at racial inequality and our place in that mandala. I would say that that's actually something that we're all engaged in. So at first, I want to talk about my own experience here. About this particular topic in relationship to what Dogen's saying. You know, the first experience that I can remember hearing about was about Rodney King, which happened in 1992 when he was beat up on the side of the road by the police. And then O.J. Simpson came along, his trial in 1995. And then I'm just picking three examples here, and then George Floyd in this year. So, you know, when O.J. Simpson happened, I viewed it through the lens of a white person, and I viewed it through the lens of being a feminist. And so what I saw was a man who had murdered his wife, from my point of view, and that this was abusive. It was a domestic abuse. And I was appalled that O.J. Simpson was let off in the trial. And I noticed that there were a lot of people, African-American people, who were very excited and happy about it. And I thought, how could they be excited and happy about this? This guy was guilty. But now, from my perspective of knowing more about this, about having more empathy and understanding through Rodney King, George Floyd, all of the other people, that black people who have been detained by the police and killed or maimed, now I understand that from the position of being African American in this country, O.J. Simpson's acquittal was a triumph of a kind of justice in which he had the money to hire the lawyers. They got him off. It was a kind of jubilation of finally the system works for us. Finally, we are able to be freed from this oppressive system that has systematic racism. So from that perspective now, I can look back at that and say, oh, yeah, now I have a much better idea of what was happening at that time. Why can I see that different vision? Because as I got closer to the shore now, as I get closer to the actuality of the experience of, as Dogen says earlier in Genja Koan, he says, to carry the self forward is delusion. To always see everything from our point of view is delusion. To allow myriad things to come forth and meet us, to have empathy and open mind, and to perceive this some aspect from the other person's point of view, frees us to have a different kind of response. It frees us to be more open in our understanding of what is actually happening. So he says, Dogen writes that the ocean of reality's presence is not just this round, non-dualistic point of view, or even the square point of view, but yet the two of those things simultaneously have to function together. So this way that I would say that the examples I've just given are all maybe from this, well, they're not all from the perspective of the infinite in variety, because how is it that we're able to have this empathy and compassion for each other and to see each other's point of view? It's because of this non-dualistic aspect of practice. But you can see how the two have to go together. We have this way in which we function in the realm of non-duality. We function in no inherently existing self. The Heart Sutra says no eyes, no ears, no nose, but it's saying no inherently existing eyes, no inherently existing self. So this no inherently existing self means that I have the capacity to understand that my selfness as a human being is not different than the selfness of all other human beings, regardless of color, intelligence, disability, ability, any of these kinds of adjectives that we can use to describe each other as different. But the reality is, essentially, we are also at the same time, and perhaps even more so, the same. So this way in which we have to combine the two, we have to combine those two things together to find wisdom. So Dogen writes that the ocean of reality's presencing is not just round or non-dualistic, are square. Dualistic, he says, they are infinite in variety. They are more complicated. These things in our lives are more complicated. These are the twining vines. Wisteria, the twining vines. Kato means complications. These complications that arise. So this round and square has to be understood together. This variety, complications, and oneness have to function together. So our life is both a state of complete interbeing with everything and ours and others' individuated particular self, ourselves, living a particular life. Both are true. Both happen together. You know, it's just like the example of how people want to dismiss Black Lives Matter by using the lens of the doctrine of emptiness as a global view by saying White Lives Matter. White Lives Matter may appear to include everything. We say it's round. It means that there's no difference. But then, when we look at this from Dogen's teaching, we understand that this view is incomplete. This view may even be harmful. White Lives Matter, we know, is actually a racist slogan. It's actually a way of saying Black lives don't matter. No one's lives matter, but my understanding of my life, my keeping power. So there we have an example of where the doctrine of non-duality is being used as a sense of oppression rather than liberation. This is something, by the way, just in general, that I hear people say about Buddhist practice. They say, oh, the doctrine of emptiness is being used to oppress me. It's saying I shouldn't have problems. The doctrine of emptiness says, everything should be great. Everything should be one. How can you be angry with me? How can you be upset with me? We're all one. How can you have your particular issues? You know, how can we talk about the importance of being, of taking care of people's various needs and cultural, personal suffering? That's a misuse of the doctrine of emptiness. That is an incomplete view. We have to get closer. We have to talk with each other. We have to not dismiss our suffering and others by saying the ocean is circular. We must listen to the the infinity of variety of experience, of suffering and healing. When you see this, when you understand our life, our practice from this point of view, you know that something is missing with this circular model. That nothing but the oneness model is an incomplete model. When we understand this, we start to really get into practice, real practice. Because real practice happens in the middle of our messy, problematic life. That's why we say a muddy and a lotus in muddy water. The lotus, the symbol of wisdom, this lotus coming, the sustenance of the lotus comes up from the mud and the dirty water in which it sits. It is not separate from. Yes, it comes up above the water and blooms, but it is still of the water. It is not separate from the water. This is our practice. We are not separate from muddy water. Our theory of practice, our doctrinal understanding of what we're up to, is the foundation. It is how we investigate. It's the ballpark. It's the map of how we discern what is helpful, what is appropriate, what is inclusive. But the map is not the whole picture. We have to actually walk the path. You may understand the doctrine of emptiness to mean everything is one thing, but you do not understand that this one thing is also each and everything manifesting. Each and everything is particular and requires that we include all of it. And this taking care of all of it is a really big koan. When emptiness is only about an experience of the self, it is about myself rejoining the big circle. And when it's about myriad things, it's about the whole of our life with other beings and persons functioning together. It is the transitional space between the big picture and the particular picture that we inhabit as bodhisattvas in training. This is our path as bodhisattvas, not to transcend reality. We say that the fully expressed bodhisattva path is to be in but not of. So the in-ness and the not-of-ness is not a separation. The not-of-ness just means that we can be patient at times that we wish, when we are having our buttons pushed. The not-of-ness means that we don't get sucked in a certain way that causes us to be so triggered that we can no longer respond with a kind of wisdom and compassion. That's what that means. It doesn't mean that you're an alien from another planet down here having some kind of disconnected view of these poor people who are struggling with their lives and you're all above it. That's not what the Bodhisattva path means. Avalokiteshvara hears the cries of the world and responds to the cries of the world. How can Avalokiteshvara do that? Only through actually understanding and being the suffering as well. Not in a way that sucks us in and incapacitates us, but in a way that generates wisdom and compassion. Finally, as human beings, Dogen says in this passage here about you can only see as far as the eye of practice can see. He says, though there are many features in the dusty world and the world beyond conditions, you see and understand only what your eye of practice can reach. So as human beings, we have a limited view. Our view is limited by our karma, our neurotic tendencies, our delusion, our likes, our dislikes, our selfishness, and even our physical sensory capacities. So when you consider all of these factors, it makes sense that we're missing a lot of what's going on around us. In the case of being out on the ocean, you can see what's on top of the ocean, but you can't see what's below the ocean. You can't see directly beneath the boat. You can't see the shoreline's intricacies. You can't see beyond the horizon. You can only see what your senses allow you to see in combination with what your mind can see. So our view is actually quite limited. This is true of almost everything we encounter. There is that, and yet, there is this decisive pivot point of response of the koan. What? What is this? How? How do I respond? Even though we know that something is missing, we know that we must do and respond. We are always making response. But knowing something is missing is actually a good thing. You shouldn't feel defeated by it. It's actually a good thing. When we understand that, we become humble. We become open. We make inquiry. We ask, what is it? We want to work to avoid and disavow in ourselves pride, self-righteousness, a closed mind, and rigid beliefs. We are not omnipotent. We want to include the experiences of others. We welcome the infinite variety of life. We include the needs, joys, and sufferings of the others as well as the self. To allow myriad things to come forth is realization. We understand this life practice realization never stops being new. Moment after moment after moment after moment. This moment, this moment, this moment. Never stops challenging us to step up, to make our best effort. This is the Bodhisattva vow. Thank you very much.